Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Lost Origins, your number one radio show for all things ancient mystery, alternative historical theory, and lost civilizations. Make sure that you guys check us out online at lost-origins.com. Sign up for that free newsletter. We've got a whole bunch of contests that we're rolling out. We cannot wait to get those in your hands so you guys are interacting with the community and winning cool stuff from your friends here at Lost Origins. You guys can also connect with us on social media. We are on almost every single platform: Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. So hit that subscribe button. Never miss an episode from your friends here at Lost Origins. This week's episode is brought to you by Inner Traditions and Baron Company. Inner Traditions has been publishing books on esoteric philosophy, New Age spirituality, and alternative health for well over 40 years. You can check out their website at innertraditions.com, and you can sign up for coupons, mailing lists, special offers, but you can also check out their catalog of books and learn more about their authors. They have a huge repertoire of incredible researchers, well-rounded authors, and some books that are just mind-boggling to read. Everything I've ever read out of that publishing house has just been fantastic. I highly recommend picking up one of their books. You will not be disappointed. So check out our friends over at Inner Traditions and Baron Company at innertraditions.com. All right, so I am guaranteeing that this week's episode is going to be insanely interesting. This week, we're going to be talking with satellite image expert Joseph White. Joseph was one of the first to discover the pyramids and the structures on Antarctica, and if you remember, those photos sent the internet into a frenzy regarding the lost and ancient pyramids of Antarctica. He recently made an appearance on Ancient Aliens, so if you saw that episode, you definitely know who he is. You've seen his work. And so this week, we're going to be discussing his discoveries, his research surrounding the pyramids of Antarctica, and how what these discoveries possibly mean for the history of mankind right after the break. Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to this week's episode of Lost Origins. I'm your host, Andrew, and if you're just tuning in, this week we are chatting with satellite image expert Joseph White. You guys might be familiar with his work. He was recently featured on Ancient Aliens, and he is one of the researchers to first discover structures, more specifically pyramidal structures, in Antarctica. So if you remember that, that sent the internet into a frenzy regarding the pyramids of Antarctica. And so I'm really excited to discuss his research, his findings, and more specifically, the implication that these structures hold for our history. Right. So it is my pleasure to welcome Joseph White to this week's episode of Lost Origins. Joseph, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Andrew. I've been checking out your radio channel. It looks very professional, and you've got some great people on there, some of whom I'm a big fan of.
Well, I appreciate
I've been really looking forward to this.
Yeah, we're excited to add you to the roster, and I have to make a quick shout out. We would not have been able to talk to many of the folks that we've been able to without the help of Inner Traditions and Baron Company. They're a publishing house out of the northeastern United States, and they have just been fundamentally crucial for us to get connected with a lot of authors and researchers. But I'm glad that you were able to check out some of the previous shows, and like I said, we are very excited to add you to the roster of conversations that we've been able to have. So.
Yep, glad to be here.
Good. Well, before we dig into your work, I always like to allow our first-time guests the opportunity to provide a bit of their background, right? That way, if we have a listener who's not very familiar with your work, they're able to kind of get to know you a little bit. So maybe share with us who you are, what your line of work is, and how you became involved in satellite imagery, and then more specifically, how you started relating that to Antarctica.
Well, I started studying satellite images a very long time ago, actually. I initially, back in the early 90s, I think it was around 91, worked for a guy in the UK who's a very famous zoologist called Dr. Ian Redmond. You guys want to look him up. He's the sort of guy with the red hair and a beard, and he's an expert on gorillas and large primates,
cool,
specifically. And he now works for the United Nations as their ambassador for endangered species, such as gorillas and other creatures. And I worked for him for about a year as a researcher, and spent a lot of time working on maps of Africa, of the Virunga mountain chain, which is where the large gorillas, there's a very rare type of gorilla there, the mountain gorilla, which is very almost extinct. I think there's only about 50 to 100 left. Mm. And at the time, there was a civil war in the area, and a lot of them were getting killed and everything. So he spent a lot of time over there. But I was making maps for him of the area, because up until that point, a lot of these countries were at war, and some of them still are. And a lot of those areas haven't been mapped properly. So what he did, which I thought was very cool, was he got hold of a guy called Arthur C. Clarke, who I'm sure some of your readership would have heard of.
Sure.
He was the guy who invented satellites and everything else and written the 2001 Space Odyssey and all that. So, but he got hold of him and asked Arthur C. Clarke if he could get NASA to send us some satellite images of Africa so that we could actually get some really accurate maps of this area so we could help locate and protect these endangered animals, you know. So that was when I first started, and that was a really good experience, actually. I was actually sent some images straight from NASA and had a big envelope turned up full of slides, and they were amazing quality,
right.
Absolutely incredible. And when I was at college, I actually took them to college and did a lecture on it and how I did it. And I got these images and then traced them into huge tracings, and then we digitized it down and made maps and stuff. So that was all very interesting. So that's how I started when I was still at college then, art college. And that's what kind of got me into it. And I've always been interested in sort of ancient alien theory. I was a huge fan of Erich von Daniken when I was growing up also, as many people have been. You know, Chariots of the Gods, I think, was his famous book that I read when I was probably about 12 or 13. And that really got the ball rolling. And even though not all of it's completely correct, the sentiment behind it and the general theory, I think, was absolutely on the money. And I think, with shows like Ancient Aliens Now and other programs like yours and in the UK as well, there's a few programs over here I've appeared on. These theories are actually now being proven, or at least partly proven, to be correct, or at least partly correct. So it's getting to a point now where I actually think that these theories are becoming more accepted generally by the public. And even the actual mainstream media are coming around to these ideas now, and things are starting to move. And the more researchers that go out there and find these sort of structures, like in Antarctica or on Mars, like I found, or on the Moon, like many people have found, the more we do that and put these things on YouTube and publish them and whatever, the more the public will actually get behind us, because it's pretty obvious that for the last at least 50 or 60 years that we've kind of been lied to,
right,
on quite a major scale by people like NASA and the various governments around the world and military organizations. When you have military controlling this type of information, it's always going to be restricted because they don't have the jurisdiction to actually announce anything, because they're strictly military and they're not politicians. And it's really up to us researchers to kind of push them into this. Like we have very recently with the announcement of water on Mars, for instance. Me and a bunch of other researchers from UFA, the United Family of Anomaly Hunters, have actually been pushing NASA for the last 5 or 6 years, especially in the last couple of years, because we keep finding water on Mars. And they've been saying, oh, we haven't found water yet. Well, there might be some, there might not be. But basically, they're lying. And we've known that there's been liquid water in some places on Mars for many years now. I would say for about 10 years.
So actual liquid water, not frozen,
yes,
in
not
the polar
frozen
caps.
Because the myth about Mars, of course, is that it's very cold. Well, it is at night. Wherever you are on Mars, it will get very, very cold at night. Something between minus 5 and about minus 80 or minus 120 degrees.
Cozy.
But during the day, it's very warm. And especially near the equator, where the Mars rover is now, the Curiosity rover, it's actually very warm. And quite habitable. So what happens is the moisture that's in the air, and there is some moisture there, it freezes it as it gets cold at night, and it condenses on the rocks. And when the sun comes up the next day, it warms up fairly quickly because it's a thin atmosphere, and it melts. So you can actually see in hundreds of the recent rover images that we've been looking at, me and my fellow researchers, you can see these big patches of water underneath these rocks, you know. And I've also found things that look like fungi and small plants and stuff like lichen and moss and stuff like this.
Wow.
And what NASA have been doing for the last, at least the last few years, but probably for many years, is giving us very low quality images of the Mars surface from the surface. So we cannot see the growth on the rocks, such as lichen and moss and perhaps fungi. And there's also petrified wood, quite a lot of it in Gale Crater, which means that there were trees. So that's something I can guarantee you with a 100% guarantee that that is the fact. As for intelligent life there, there may well have been, yes. We could go into that, but that would take a whole new show.
Sure. That could be a whole separate episode that we can run.
That's kind of what I've been doing the last few years, is really concentrating on Mars and the Mars rover images.
Okay.
But I've also been doing a lot of satellite work with the Moon and Pluto and Ceres and a lot of the planets in the solar system as well, because there seem to be some crazy structures all over the place.
Right. Well, and I think we were right on the money by saying we could almost have another episode specifically about all of that additional work that you're doing.
I would love to. I would love to do one just on Mars. I mean, I've got a hell of a lot of material on Mars.
Perfect. What I'd like to do, though, is talk about your discoveries on Antarctica.
Yes.
I mean, Mars is fascinating. The stuff you're looking at on Pluto and throughout the solar system, definitely just mind-boggling. But there's so much stuff here on our own planet that we don't even know about, or that we're too close-minded from an archaeological standpoint to admit or acknowledge or research, right? And so it takes people like you peeling back that veil to really start understanding what chapters of our history are missing or have been removed from the record altogether. And so I think your work in Antarctica is doing just that. So for our listeners that are not familiar with what you've done with the satellite images of Antarctica, maybe walk us through your work specifically with that continent, what you found in terms of structures, and we can kind of go from there.
Well, I initially was very skeptical about finding anything there at all, but I've been reading a lot in the last 5 or 10 years, books, well, in fact, for many years, the books by the Flemaths, course. I think you had is it Ander Flemath you had on recently?
Yeah, he's been on the show.
Yes, I've read many of his books.
Beneath the Ice is a damn good read.
Who see? Yes, and I think when the Sky Fell, I think is one of the books I've got here, right on my shelf here, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great book about Antarctica and Atlantis, and I read that many years ago, and it stuck with me because it's very well written, it's very well researched, and it's always stuck with me, and it's always been in the back of my mind when looking at these places on Earth. And having read lots of books by Graham Hancock and other people as well about the pyramids, and Robert Bouval, of course, mm-hmm. Who I actually met when I was shooting Ancient Aliens recently, which was really cool. I'm a huge fan of his.
Awesome.
He's kind of, these authors between them, I think, have actually caused a polar shift in the, pardon the pun, in public opinion, because what they have done is kind of got together and kind of amalgamated a lot of these theories that have been kind of floating around for a very long time, some of these theories, hundreds of years even.
Right.
But they put them in a very modern and succinct way, in a way that most people can understand without being too complicated. And from reading these books, I came to the conclusion there must be some pyramids in Antarctica, because for the pyramid network to work, and they are, or at least they were linked in some way, perhaps using radio waves or whatever, there must be more pyramids around the Earth, not just in Central America and South America and in Egypt, but possibly in Australia, possibly in North America, possibly even in Canada, possibly, you know, all around the Earth, for them to link up efficiently. and do what they were supposed to do, whatever that was. Whether it was some kind of energy field or some kind of communication thing, I don't know, probably a bit of both. I realized there must be some sort of, on the sort of northern part of Antarctica, near towards sort of South Africa. And there may also be, according to that, to my theory, that there should also be at least one very large pyramid in South Africa as well, which hasn't been found yet, but doesn't mean it's not there.
Right.
So I kind of worked out, I triangulated it. I drew a sort of triangle from the Egyptian pyramids, drew a line across to the Mexican pyramids, and I drew a sort of line down to the South Pole and thought, right, I'm going to concentrate on this particular area, which is kind of north of the South Pole, kind of on the bit we're most familiar with, which is the bit that sticks up when you look at the South Atlantic. And I was looking at the Reed Mountains, which is quite a large one. I think they're about 50 or 60 miles across. This is a range which is part of the Shackleton Range, which is very large, and is probably a couple of hundred miles from the north coast, as we know it now, 200 or 300 miles south of there. And it's very, very easy to find. So all you have to do is go on Google Earth, look at the Shackleton Range. It's a huge mountain range, and then go to the south of the, just to the south of that range, and there's a smaller range called the Reed Mountains. And right smack in the middle of those mountains was a big square, 2 kilometer structure. Now, unfortunately, the images on Google Earth have been downgraded quite considerably from the original satellite images. And you have to look at overall shapes and look for straight lines and symmetry and right angles and that sort of thing. This is a tried and tested technique that people have been using for many years, searching for pyramids in the Far East, the Middle East, of course. And the great thing about satellite images is that they see into the near infrared, which means you can see through the surface of the ice, meaning you can see structures under the ice. Now, how far under you can actually really see in the ice is debatable.
Sure.
But you can see enough. If the structures are near the surface, you can see enough to actually see the shapes. And if you get the images and enhance them and enhance the contrast and turn them to negative and play around with them a bit, you can actually push the shapes out. You can actually see them. Now, I was very lucky. When I was contacted by the guys from Ancient Aliens, one of the researchers said, we'd really like to do a show about Antarctica. And I said, that's great. I'd love to do it. And they said, we looked you up and found this video you put out a few years ago about Antarctica and this huge kind of pyramid-like structure. And I said, well, it'd be great, but it would be even better if we had some better high-quality, really high-res NASA images of the area, the original images. And they managed to actually get hold of these for me. Now, I'd already been trying to do this myself for a number of years, couldn't get hold of them. But somehow they managed to get hold of them. And I had another look, and I was absolutely astounded at what I found, because it actually confirmed what I initially thought, that there was a massive structure here with multiple structures inside it and around it as well.
Well, you're talking about 2 kilometers in each direction, a square structure. I'm just trying to paint a picture here. Square structure,
yeah.
2 kilometers on each side. I mean, that's like 2.5 miles. That's huge. Right?
It's very large. I don't actually think it's one single structure. What I think we're seeing here is a complex that is overall a perfect square. It's kind of cut into the side of a mountain. Now, the mountain is largely obscured with ice.
Right.
You can see the peak of the mountain, and the structure is kind of just to the left of it and kind of cut into the side of the mountain. And what we have is a very large walled square kind of base by the looks of it. But inside this base, you have a perfect equilateral triangular structure, which itself is about a kilometer across, or just under a kilometer. It's very, very large indeed. Now, whether that's actually one side of a pyramid that we can see and the rest of it's obscured by the ice, it may well be, because it is largely covered in ice. And I've done my best to, in the recent video I did on it, I got these images that we used for Ancient Aliens, and I did a new video about it, and you can actually see a lot more detail. And I sort of go on about whether it, could it possibly be a Nazi built base, or could it be a very, very ancient structure, which I think it is, or something else? Could it be an alien structure, for, perhaps built by an alien culture many, many thousands of years ago before Antarctica was frozen?
Right.
So we don't know who built it, but the structure is there, and I'm absolutely sure that if anyone was willing to go there with a drilling rig of some sort, and some, you know, some, what would be really good would be some ground penetrating radar images, GPR images,
yeah, GPR,
that would see right through the ice.
Right, that'd be huge there. And you kind of led me to my next question here. And, you know, with a structure being this big, and I said 2.5 miles, that's incorrect. It's like 1.25 miles for 2 kilometers.
Yeah,
you know,
but it's still very large.
It's still huge, right.
It's way bigger than most, well, any building we know of on Earth, I think.
Right.
I mean, the Pentagon was pretty huge. It's sort of about twice the size of the Pentagon, I think, you know, which could actually be seen from space, the Pentagon.
Right, and so this structure is dwarfing that in comparison. I mean, so there's a lot of characteristics about this structure that demonstrate evidence of this having been man-made. We do have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I do want to dig into some of these examples or some of these characteristics of this structure, this complex, whatever it is, having led you to believe that it's man-made. So more from Joseph White surrounding the pyramids of Antarctica right after the break. Hey there, ladies and gentlemen, and we are back. If you're just tuning in, I'm your host, Andrew, and this week we are digging in to the pyramids of Antarctica with satellite imagery expert Joseph White. Joseph is one of the original pioneers taking a look at the satellite images and discovering these structures on Antarctica. And so this week we are talking about these structures. What could they have been? Who could have made them? What does this mean for our history and our story? Before the break, we were talking about how he found these structures, and we started discussing briefly the layout of these structures or this complex. We discussed how large it was, how massive it is. But what I wanted to do, Joseph, was dig into some of the specific characteristics of this site that led you to believe that there is no way this is naturally occurring. This has to have been influenced by the hands of mankind or some type of intelligent being. So if you can share with us a little bit about the site with respect to some of its man-made characteristics, I think that would be perfect.
Well, as with any man-made structure, they usually involve squares and rectangles and right-angled corners. And I've yet to find anyone, although there are many people on YouTube who seem to think that there are square mountains and things like that, no one's actually been able to find one on Earth. And square mountains or perfectly square symmetrical structures do not exist in nature. And what led me to believe that this specifically was a man-made structure is not just the shape of it, but the fact that it also lines up to the compass, just like all the other major pyramids on Earth do. And in fact, it has some of the meridian lines going right through the center of this structure. So whoever built this had a knowledge of longitude and latitude, an incredibly accurate knowledge of longitude and latitude, which we've only really had in probably the last 60 or 70 years on Earth. You know, so whoever built this thing, and it does look like it's built. I mean, it has internal structures which are largely covered in ice, but you can see a very good square outline, which looks like a massive wall of some sort. And there's an internal triangular structure, which looks like a side of a pyramid, or may just be a flat triangular structure. I don't really know. It's hard to say whether it's angled. It looks like it's slightly angled up. So I think it's actually part of a pyramid. And there are also, like, I managed to find, after getting the new images from the guys at Ancient Aliens, the more detailed NASA images, I managed to find that there are structures outside this complex as well, which look like smaller outbuildings. So it looks like a town, or at least the center, or main center of a perhaps a city or town. Now I couldn't tell you how big this city or town is, but we're probably only seeing a fraction of it, and it may turn out to be very large indeed. It may be many miles across. But what, the visible structures that I found so far will stretch beyond this big square base, as I call it, and you can see them stretching out for about a kilometre or two either side. And there may be many, many more which are covered in ice that we can't.
You still with us?
So well with the map on Google Earth, and if you go on Google Earth and look at this structure, and there are directions on my YouTube channel, you can actually look on the video there, and it shows you how to find it. And, you can, and if you put the grid on the actual map, you can go into options and pull the grid over the image. The edges of the grid line up perfectly with the edges of this structure, and that says to me that it has to be man-made, because if it was a random natural structure, A, it would not be square, and B, it would not line up with the compass.
Right. Well, and it's just mind-boggling, too, that there are so many different pieces of evidence pointing to man's intervention here. And when your average person thinks of Antarctica, they think there's no way in hell that somebody was ever down there, right? But you mentioned Rand Flemath earlier, and I love Rand's work because he really kind of carried the proverbial torch from Hapgood. I mean,
oh, yes.
Those theories that Hapgood put together, that like it's between Hapgood, Rand Flemath, and your work, it's like we are completing this giant timeline of how Antarctica really plays into the missing chapters of human history. It's mind-boggling to me.
It is, and the real question we have to ask here is not whether there are structures there, but who built them and how old they are. More and more people are finding them, and there have been in the mainstream media recently other people who claim to have found some structures there, but they're not showing us the images, and I think that NASA are withholding some images of the area, especially the ground-penetrating radar images, which can see a way down into the ice.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's images that Google Earth, for example, has kind of censored or blocked out areas of the Antarctic continent, correct?
Yes, there are. And they do the same on Mars. They've done it in Nazca and Peru. There are large areas of data missing. And it always seems to be somewhere interesting. The Cydonia region on Mars, where just north of where the so-called face is, there's a huge area which is completely scrubbed of any detail. And there are in South America and in Central America, there are areas where they just scrubbed it. The images have literally been censored, and then they've just been downgraded and shoved onto Google Earth or whatever. And you can see these huge blank spots. Now, the weird thing was, I also found another base in the original video that I made about this Antarctic structure, which I did a few years back. I went directly south because I thought, if this is lined up, there may be something lined up with it. And often the case with pyramids is, or pyramid-type structures, you will find something that's lined up to it exactly, but many, many miles away. So I went exactly due south from this structure, a couple of hundred miles, and I found another base, but it's much smaller. And it's been scrubbed. The image has been smudged over, but you can see an intelligent structure there. Now, this may well be a military base. It may be something else. I don't know. But it's not as clear, and it's nowhere near as big, but it's not really supposed to be there. And if you carry on due south again from there and go through the South Pole and out the other side of Antarctica, there's a huge 20, I think that's about a 12-mile rectangle of removed data. And it's an enormous blank piece on the map. And it looks to me as if that somebody up there has removed the data from that particular image. And there are quite a lot of these spots in Antarctica where there's missing data. Now, some experts may say, oh, that's just because the satellite hasn't looked there yet. Well, I disagree. Because the whole continent and the whole world has been mapped countless times by many, many satellites. And the only reason they would leave out something is probably because there's something there they didn't want us to see.
Right. Well, and you mentioned a military base potentially. I mean, didn't the Nazis have a presence in Antarctica during World War II?
Yes, and before that, yes, they I think originally went there in the 1920s and 30s, as they did all over. They went all over the world looking for various things in the Middle East and the Far East and in Central and South America. They were looking for technology, ancient technology, apparently. Mm-hmm. They were very keen on this, and some people do think, although there is a slight lack of evidence for this, that there are many, many rumors that they did actually find some old engravings or some old scrolls or something from somewhere around the world, mm-hmm. that actually had designs of flying machines like bananas, which are these craft that were mentioned in the ancient texts of India.
Right.
It is rumored that they found some of these texts very interesting and based some of their very exotic aircraft designs on these particular craft that are written about in these ancient texts. Also, they, I think, like many people around the world, if you look at everybody from Japan to the Amerindians in North America, the American Indians, Native Americans, I should say, mm-hmm. And if you look at all the cultures around the world, they all have a kind of myth system or a belief that they had ancestors that lived on a mystical continent somewhere. And the ancient Greeks and even the Egyptians claim to either have come from another planet or from a place called Atlantis. Now, whether that Atlantis was on Earth or on another planet, possibly both. I actually think that when Plato mentioned Atlantis and its position on Earth, he was talking about Antarctica. But there have been many, many other, many authors over the last 100 or 200 years, especially very recently, that have claimed that they found Antarctica in the south of Spain. Some claim to have found it in the Indian Ocean or in Central America or Cuba or somewhere like off the coast of Cuba. Now, these all may be parts of Atlantis. Now, what we need to get, Atlantis was one place. It was actually an empire. And I do believe that what we're seeing around the world, and some of these buried structures off the coast of Mexico, you see underwater, off the coast of Florida, you have these crazy structures all over the world, off the coast of Japan, off the coast of India, these huge, huge structures underwater. Now, they must have been built by a very ancient culture a very, very long time ago before the water levels rose dramatically in the Great Flood. Around 12,000 years ago. So there must have been a worldwide culture that probably had its main capital on one of these huge islands, perhaps Antarctica or perhaps somewhere else. Cuba would have been an enormous island back in those days, mm-hmm. And would have joined up with most of the other islands in the area. So that would have been a huge place. But one thing that really stands out to me, and this is something that Rand was talking about in your previous show about Antarctica, is that when Plato mentioned the size of Atlantis, he said it was the size of Libya and the Middle East or something
and
like
Asia
that.
Asia combined, I mean, right.
Yes. Now, that is very, very large indeed. And the only island we have that big is Antarctica or perhaps Australia.
Right. Well, so he also places
it has to be one or the other.
Right. And he also places it beyond the Pillars of Hercules, which is a very cryptic
It is.
Here's where it could be, right? So I mean, it's so hard to you know, put your thumb on it for sure. But at the same time, if you subscribe to Hapgood's theory of Earth crust displacement, that mm-hmm. could place Antarctica about 2,000 or more miles a little bit further north, which puts it into a more temporal climate or temperate climate,
exactly.
which allows for this to happen.
It does, and it's not. The thing is that the coast of Antarctica is constantly changing, of course, because of supposed global warming. Now, we're told that it's all melting, but actually parts of it are gaining more ice. I think the northern part that we're familiar with of Antarctica is warming up, and there's lots of ice melting there. But when you go to the other side of Antarctica, the bit that we never really look at, it's actually growing ice there. And so it really depends on what part of the continent you're looking at, because it is extremely large. And the fact that it has its own tectonic plate, unlike anywhere else on Earth, it's completely surrounded by a tectonic ridge. In other words, it could have moved very, very rapidly, or at least over a relatively short time of a few thousand years, mm-hmm. 2,000 or 3,000 years. And this is something I've always been a supporter of. It may well have been much further north or much further towards Australia, for instance, in the Indian Ocean. And there could have been there was a huge cataclysm in the flood that kind of pushed it. Now, what would happen then with massive climate change that would have happened over a very short space of time is that huge amounts of ice would have formed on this continent as it slipped further south. And that the weight of that ice would have actually increased, in words, it would have pushed it further quicker because the weight would have built up on it. And the centrifugal force of the Earth spinning round would have acted like would have kind of pushed it further mm-hmm. towards where it is now. So in other words, it could have accelerated the actual movement of the whole continent. This could be an explanation for how there was at one point a civilization there, which we are only now starting to uncover. There could have, I mean, I'm not saying the whole continent was inhabited. I actually think that only parts of the northern areas around the sort of Reed Mountains and Shackleton Range were probably inhabited because they're much higher up.
Right.
And also, I've done a lot of research into this recently, looking at the actual coastline of Antarctica. Now, when you go on Google Earth, if you can select in your menu on the left of the page to show borders and that sort of thing, and coastline, you just click on that, and it will show you the actual shape of Antarctica as a yellow line, I think it is. And interestingly enough, this particular thing that I found at the Reed Mountains is right on the edge of the actual continent. In other words, if you remove the ice that's there now, there's a huge sea of ice just over to the left of it. If you take that away, you could have sailed right up to these mountains, and there's a huge natural inlet there, which is like a huge river delta, which may have been a port. And this huge structure that I found may be part of a town or city that overlooked a port area many, many thousands of years ago. Now, I haven't found the other things to back this up yet, but this is just a theory at the moment.
Sure, sure.
But it's perfectly situated. If this area was unfrozen, it's perfectly situated to be a capital city of some sort and overlook a major port with a major river inlet. And it's all there. You can see it in the actual images because you can play around with the images on Google Earth, and you can remove bits here and add bits there. And then you can actually work out that this thing would have been very close to what would have been the coastline at the time. And I initially thought it might have been a Nazi base, but then I thought to myself, it's way too large, and it would take a hell of a lot of manpower to build such a large structure within the last 50 or 100 years, because it would have been way too cold and too much ice. So this leads me to believe that it's a very ancient structure, and it may well be 13 or 14,000 years old. I'm guessing it's way older than that. I would say near 100,000. It could even be millions of years old. I really don't know. But it's more likely to be very old than it is recent.
Well, everything that you're describing right now, Joseph, I cannot help but mentally connect that piece to the Piri Reis map and Orontius Phineus map. I mean, you're explaining the way that these cartographers would have been able to map this continent. I mean, with the Orontius Phineus map, I mean, we can see interior features of the continent, for example, mountain ranges and lakes and rivers. I mean, you can see that on the map, that when you look at the satellite images, it all kind of adds up and checks out, however primitive, I'll admit, but it's still there. Do you think that was how these maps came to be?
Yes, and also, I think it really kind of harks back to the ancient library at Alexandria.
Sure,
and
sure.
I really think that there, in that library, were maps of the entire world, from the ancient mariners. Now, whether these were the Phoenicians or the ancient, this is pre-Greek and pre-Roman and pre-Egyptian. Now, there was obviously a culture who were extremely adept at navigating the seas of the Earth and understood longitude and latitude. So they must have had very accurate timepieces to do so, mm-hmm. like the Antikythera mechanism. Now, that's something that's been dated around 2,100 years old. Mm-hmm. Could be older, could be way older. I would imagine it could be as much as 5,000 years old, or perhaps even older than that. And the Antikythera mechanism was basically a clock, but it was an astronomical clock.
Right.
And one way to measure time, now, the way you measure distance when you're traveling at sea, you have to have an accurate timepiece to measure the. You've got to work out how fast you're going and work out exactly what time of day it is. And then you can work out how far you travel each day, and then you can work out how far. And this is a fairly recent thing, apparently, that we've been able to do for only about the last 500 years, 400 or 500 years. So the people that built these things may well have had the ability to navigate the entire planet very accurately using these incredibly complex timepieces that were made of brass. And by observing the planets and stars and positioning of the sun and the moon and everything else, they were able to accurately work out exactly how far everything away was and how long it took to get there and everything else. So I actually think that the maps that were largely destroyed in the Alexandrian fire that destroyed the library there a couple of thousand years ago, I think it was, I think that some of those maps may well have been copied by pirates and navigators. And people like Columbus, the guy who supposedly discovered America, were well aware of this, and in fact knew well already that America was there before they even claimed to have discovered it.
Right.
I mean, he was the last guy to discover America, if anything. And the thing is, I did study cartography at college, so I know a bit about map making. And what you do is you use as many source maps as you possibly can. You try to get your own data as well, so you try and make it as accurate as possible. And you think, right, which is the most accurate? So that's a reliable source. That's a reliable source. And this was very common even 500, 600 years ago. They were copying maps which could have been very ancient. They could have been made thousands of years before on parchment or something, and gathered various parts of these information and put them together. And in fact, Columbus was a map maker himself. He was a cartographer. And studied in Genoa, which is where he came from. Mm-hmm. And there was a guy called Giovanni Cabotta as well, who's very famous in this part of the world, who sailed from Bristol, which is where I'm from now.
Okay.
He sailed from Bristol and found Newfoundland. And in fact, he did that before. Sorry, it's in the ring there. He did that actually before that Columbus discovered America. So it's a well-known fact that cartographers over many millennia. I can't even speak now, millennia, sorry, have been copying older maps. And the Peri Reis map is one of these maps. And it looks very much like it was copied from an ancient map that shows Antarctica as an unfrozen continent, which it has not been for many, many thousands of years, possibly millions of years. Mm-hmm. How is that possible? That's the big question.
Well, and he cites older source maps in his own handwriting on the map itself. I mean, He is explaining that it's not his original work, that he was able to procure this data from much older maps. So I think you're right on the money. I mean, I think everything that you're outlining, like I said earlier, you are building on what Rand Flemath and Charles Hapgood have been working on so diligently over the years. And we need more people like you in the field, Joseph. I mean, people that are willing to ask the hard questions, and they're willing to do so from an unbiased standpoint, and they're not worried about the dogmatic views of uniformitarian archaeology you know what I mean? Like, it's people who are purely after answers and truth. That's what we need more of. And so, I mean, I tip the proverbial hat to you, my friend. I mean, what you're doing is huge for our species and for our history. What's next for you?
It's also enormous fun as well.
Oh, absolutely. It's a giant puzzle that you're getting to put together.
It's the way I equate it is it's like putting together a puzzle that you had for Christmas, but it's like a million-piece puzzle, and you haven't got a picture to look at to, right. to get the pieces in the right place. So you have to kind of build it from your imagination, but build on the work that other notable writers and researchers have done as well. Mm-hmm. And you know, I recommend anybody to get into this. I mean, anyone can look on Google Earth, and there are many researchers now finding new pyramids in places that we never thought of before. There are something like 20 or 30 have been discovered in Egypt or in the surrounding deserts just in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And some of these are very large, and I'm sure there will be many, many more. You don't really need a great deal of technology to do it. You just need Google Earth, and you need some basic software to look at images, and you can download satellite images for free from NASA or wherever else, European Space Agency or whatever. And in fact, if you go on my YouTube channel, you can get the links for all these things. And I've also built an app as well called the Artanian TV app, and that has all the links, all the satellite image links, and all the website links, and everything you need to become a researcher and look at all these images. And this, basically, what I did, I got all the links and image links and website links that I've gathered over the last 5 or 10 years, and I put them all into one app, including I got all the NASA apps, all the NASA space apps, and took the code from them and put them all into my app. So
wow.
Basically, instead of having all these NASA apps, you can just use mine, and it would do all that in one app, pretty much. And it links to something like, oh God, about 50 million images from space.
Wow.
About 20 million of those are just of Mars, mostly quite recently. But of every image that's ever been taken in space, you can, and on Earth, can be linked to via my app, and it's completely free. Anyone can download it, and it's something I thought I'd give out to people who are interested. You know,
that's incredible. Well, I mean, what else is in the works for you right now? Are you working on a book? Do you have any other speaking engagements that you have coming up? Or
I've got maybe one or two interviews coming up in the next month or so with various channels and people on YouTube and stuff like that. I've been taking a little bit of a break from it, to be honest. I've got quite bad hay fever.
Sure.
It's the height of the hay fever season here. I'm actually wiping my eyes at the moment. But I've been sort of taking a bit of a break. It's quite hard work working with ancient aliens. I did a lot of work for them, a lot of research work as well as being on the show. It was great stuff. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed it. But I've been sort of very, very busy over the last few years, and I've sort of built my channel up from nowhere, really. And I've got about 15,500 subscribers now on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
And which is pretty cool, but it seems that only a few thousand of them actually watch the videos, which is weird. But and I'm trying to concentrate, actually, on getting some of these things in the mainstream media, like on the TV, perhaps. I mean, the TV news people have refused to show any of my stuff so far. But the press in the UK and in the US and in Europe have published quite a few of my finds so far. Mm-hmm. Some of them were just optical illusions, and they sort of jumped on them. You know, there was the giant mouse on Mars. That was just an optical illusion, which I said it was from the very start, of course.
Sure.
But they jumped on that, like the childish media do. They jumped on it and said, oh, it was a giant mouse on Mars. And it was all over the TV in America and the UK and everything, which probably didn't do me any favours, actually, because it was obviously not a mouse. It's just some rocks that looked like a mouse.
Right.
And but they kind of went along with that. But I think there's a sort of plan here. I think that the media have been briefed on this stuff. And I actually think they're slowly but surely letting these things through. And occasionally they put a funny story through like that. But they have published some of my more serious stuff as well. Some of the structures I found and this sort of thing, pyramids and stuff like that. So some of the media are actually are catching up with us now. And luckily we have shows like yours and others around the world that are helping get this stuff out there.
Well, and that's why we started this program and the website altogether, is to allow researchers a platform to better educate the general public about their researchers, their research, their theories, and just what's going on that the general public need to be aware of, right? So, Yeah, it's been an incredible experience watching this grow as well. And I really would like to have an aside with you and talk about bringing you back to talk about your work on Mars and Pluto and you know all the other satellite images that you've been able to dig through. It's fascinating stuff.
Yes, I'd love to come back and talk about Mars and the other planets like the Moon and everything else, because it seems that there was an ancient alien culture which may have been living on Earth, perhaps in Antarctica. They may well have been the intelligent beings that made these structures way before we were able to. Mm-hmm. And it certainly seems that on the Moon and on Mars, there are many, many sort of pyramid-like structures, and some of these are very, very large indeed. And almost everywhere we look, we find these what look like intelligent structures. I can't prove they all are, but some of them certainly look that way.
Right.
There may well have been a sort of a culture that was throughout our solar system many, many thousands of years ago that kind of left for some reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe we are them. Maybe we are related to them. Who knows?
And there's so many different ways that we could approach that, and that's a rabbit hole and a show in its own right.
That's another whole rabbit hole. <there.
laughs> Exactly. I mean, the work of Stitchin is, there's some incredible stuff in there. But we are unfortunately running out of time. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Your work is fascinating, and like I said, we need more people like you in the field. So thank you for sharing your work with us and your discoveries, and we look forward to bringing you back on the show.
I look forward to coming back. It's been great. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's episode of Lost Origins. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did. It was truly fascinating. Check out Joseph's websites. We're going to put the links in the show notes below, and make sure that you check out his app. He's done a lot of work to make this accessible to people like you and I, so definitely take advantage of it while you can. Make sure that you guys hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode from your friends here at Lost Origins. And tune in next week when we are going to be talking with geologist Scott Walter. I know that's a name you all know from his show America Unearthed, and we're going to be digging into his work surrounding the Hooked X and the Knights Templars' presence here in America pre-Columbus. Until next time, I'm your host, Andrew, and I want you all to continue to question everything.